The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio, where with Teresa Cope, Chief Exec of Manx Care today. So 4 years on, remember, Manx Care delivers services in primary care, urgent and emergency, integrated care, community care, mental health services, social care, specialised care, preventative medicine, obviously that's immunisation and screening, research, the public health delivery programmes, women's, children's and families' health. And at the bottom of that, they get a lot of heat as well, a lot of political heat. Teresa Cope is with us today. Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Well, it's balancing the budget, let's put it that way. You have to, obviously, as chief executive, you have to look at the bottom line and you have to talk to Department of Health and Social Care. Same as ever was. When it was DHSC, they were always going back to Tynwald for extra money.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a challenge. And I think there isn't a health system across the world that isn't grappling with the same issue. How do you deliver comprehensive healthcare, meet the ever-increasing demands of the growing population, the different interventions and drugs that you can use, and how you remain within a budget? Obviously, this year, as we went into 25-26, there was a different approach taken to the mandate and the operating plan, with a much stronger alignment between those two documents than there ever had been before. And I think that gave us the opportunity to really describe what can be delivered within the operating budget and fundamentally what cannot. So we have taken a different approach, but yes, it will always be a challenge to deliver comprehensive health and social care within a budget.
Okay. It's fair to say that the cost of most things hasn't come down. Certainly personnel, the cost of personnel hasn't come down. Medications, as you say, interventions, different treatments, stuff is always coming along. So who decides at Manx Care whether or not you'll take on a new medication or take on a new procedure, something that's going to cost thousands and thousands of pounds? Where does that decision lie? Is that the department or your own?
It's both, but actually this comes down through the mandate. And this is where, you know, we talk about inflation, and we know inflation has come down from what it was. So running at sort of about 2.5%, actually what we know is drug inflation has been way ahead of that, contract inflation way ahead of that. And over the last couple of years, Manx Care has had some very significant pay inflation. So we've had 2 years of a 6% pay award for staff. And obviously we, at the end of last year, settled the long-standing pay dispute with our doctors, which again was a sort of an 8% and a 6% uplift, and with a further 2%. So, you know, there's some significant costs associated with both pay inflation, contract inflation and drug inflation. And there are still some areas to be debated. So one of the areas which I think has been a feature of our discussions for the last 3 years is NICE Technologies, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, and what they say about what drugs we should be prescribing and what interventions are available, and ultimately what the costs of those need to look like. And that is a joint discussion with Manx Care and the department as to what we can afford to do within the budget that we have.
NICE is...
Yes, NICE. National Institute for Clinical Excellence. So that is a body which looks independently at new drugs onto the market, new technologies and interventions, and assesses their clinical effectiveness. So is it worth the NHS prescribing these? Does that have a benefit? Does that have a cost benefit? And so, you know, that analysis is done for us, but then obviously we then have to assess about whether we can afford to implement that.
Okay. Training nurses, training medical staff. What's where are we with Manx Care and the training programs that are going on? Growing our own, if you like.
Absolutely. We committed right at the outset of Manx Care to really, wherever possible, develop our training offer on island. So grow our own heroes. It's the absolute cornerstone of sustainable and resilient healthcare for the island. You know, these are people who live on the island, who want to work on the island, and we want to train them on the island. So we've been investing in that training programme. We have a great facility in Kildare. And a couple of years ago, in conjunction with the department, we made the commitment to increase the number of student nurse places being trained in Kildare and increase the bursary to £10,000 per year, which I think really incentivises. So this year, we will have 24 student nurses qualifying, 18 in adult nursing and 6 in mental health. They will graduate in the next few weeks. Another 44 student nurses are in training, and we increase that cohort to 40 from September. And as always, we guarantee that if any nurse wants to work for Manx Care who's trained with us, we absolutely give them a job. So that commitment is given, and we're just going through that process of allocating where our new registered nurses will be working. I think it's a real positive, Andy, in that we have dramatically reduced the number of vacancies we have for registered professionals. Nursing being a real success in that once we give these nurses all a role, we are at a very low number of vacancies. And those vacancies are in those sort of more specialist areas like neonatal nursing and midwifery. So I think it's a real positive. It's a strategy that has really worked for us. And ultimately, that vacancy rate across the organisation has reduced from sort of around 22% when we started to between 10 and 12% now. Okay. So that's why our headcount has gone up. And I know headcount increase is a very tricky matter to manage. And I know government is very conscious about monitoring headcount increase. But actually, in health and care, we would have needed agency or bank staff to have filled those roles. And it would have been costing us more than actually being able to recruit our own staff and develop our own staff internally.
Okay, a message in from Carl that just said, it's all very well training and funding people. What do you do if they just leave the Isle of Man and you're exporting those skills and that cost?
Yeah, I think that's always a risk. It's a very free labour market. There are lots and lots of opportunities.
It's a transferable skill.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't think we can sort of restrict or make it a requirement. But what we do know is that all of the nurses that we have trained for the last few years, we offer a good training opportunity. Most have stayed with us. We have lower attrition rates. But ultimately, and we want to keep developing. So I think one of the further follow-ons is that we continue to develop our nurses and our allied health professionals, so to allow them to do more specialist courses, prescribing courses, so we're able to keep them here on the island. So retention is really important. But ultimately, you know, there are professional vacancies all over the world, and I don't think we are in a position to stop people from leaving the island if they so wish. Contractually, I don't think we have any opportunity to do that. What we have to make sure is we can give them a full and enjoyable experience and that professional development here on the island, which is sort of why that's part of the offer here.
Okay, this is from Brian, who just said, why has Manx Care got rid of the bus stop at the hospital?
That's nothing to do with Manx Care, unfortunately. So we still have the bus stop at the hospital.
There's no bus shelter.
I think there is, or it's going to be put back in.
Oh, is it going to be put?
But that's not a decision that Manx Care has been involved in. So this is infrastructure who deal with that. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to the phones. And we've got, first of all, there's Ralph's with us. Hi, Ralph. You're live with Teresa Cope.
Good afternoon. How are you doing? All right?
Good, thanks.
Hi, Ralph.
Good. How are you doing? Yeah, I just got it on that question. You talking about recruiting nurses and things, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
And you also, I think, believe that you're doing more into community to keep people at home rather than in the beds, yeah? In the hospital beds.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Question is, when a district nurse's contract is up, you're not renewing them. Why is that?
So if a district nurse is employed substantively with the organisation, then their contract maintains. What we have looked at is we've looked at the productivity and the opportunities, and there has been a piece of work done in the last year, Ralph, which has looked to say we actually don't need as many district nurses in the community as what we had. And so therefore, if someone's on a bank contract or a short-term contract, for financial reasons, we've looked at whether we need those at this moment in time or not. You're absolutely right. We are looking to move more services in the community, but we can't just lift and shift those very, very quickly. That has to be done in a planned way. But we would not ever make a registered professional redundant or terminate their contract if they have a substantive one for us. And I think what you're talking about is perhaps someone who had a short-term contract with us, or even a contract for bank hours that we might not need at this moment in time.
Okay, I'm just wondering, because if you're going to keep more people at home, then you're going to need more nursing.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we absolutely understand that, and that's why, you know, that plan is in place. But this is two different issues. We absolutely have a plan to promote what's called home first, so looking at where we can care for people in our communities. But obviously, we need to make sure we've got the right workforce for that as well.
Okay, all right. Ralph, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, one more thing.
Okay.
Right. I just wonder why there are no doctors on call up in the north or the west of the island at night. And that if a doctor is called out, they have to come from Douglas. And sometimes there's no doctor available, so an ambulance has to come out.
Yeah.
For even a small job. Like my father has a catheter, it keeps falling out. Keeps popping out. And it seems a bit... a waste of money to have to be sending somebody out from Douglas rather than having someone on call in the north that could just come out and do it, because it's only a 5 or 6 minute job night.
Okay.
Yeah, no, and happy to look at that. But we have got a centralised service at night. So this is our MEDS, Manxy Emergency Doctor Service, at night. It does run out of a single location, co-located with the hospital for that reason. There are doctors available to go out and other professionals to go out if needed. But yes, I mean, it would be not cost effective, I think, to have a number of doctors on call. And Douglas, obviously, is the most central area. The majority of calls into MEDS we can deal with over the phone, or people go into MEDS to have their treatment. It's relatively small numbers where people actually go out and do home visits during the nighttime period. But, you know, simple things like that, we can certainly have a look at. And I can take that offline with you, Ralph.
Just checking, Ralph, every time your father needs a doctor, has one turned up?
No. He's had to be taken into the hospital.
Okay.
In an ambulance.
Okay.
And that seems to me to be not very cost effective.
Okay. All right. We appreciate that. Thanks for your call today, Ralph. And that's something Teresa will take away. Gaz on 313 says, UCM's just scrapped three courses, one of which was health and social care. Is this a negative for the future of Manx care?
I'm not sure. I'm not aware of that, so I'll have to pick that up with our education provider.
Well, this is just a note. We don't know whether that's true or not.
No.
But I mean, how much did Manxcare rely on UCM?
So we work very closely in conjunction with UCM, and you know, they obviously feed us a number of those individuals, those students who have done preliminary levels, and then they come through to us to perhaps do more formalised training, like their registered nurse training. So we do work really, really closely, and perhaps I'll take that back and understand what the impact of that, or whether indeed it is true, or whether something else is replacing those courses. But again, that would be UCM's decision. But we do have, you know, and I think the success is we do manage to have a lot of individuals coming through that pathway, and that's why we've been able to offer 40 student nurse places this this year, Andy.
Okay, and they're degree courses, I take it.
They are.
Nursing is a degree profession.
It is. And then they can obviously go on, and this is what we're planning for 2026, is to offer that master's programme. So once you've got your first Bachelor of Science degree, you can then go on and do your master's, and that's a programme which will be running from 2026.
Just to confirm, says 090, the bus shelter at the hospital has been replaced by a new one. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Can I ask Teresa a question? What's happening with the ambulance station? Is it moving? Is it moving?
The Douglas Ambulance Station.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a very active part of the discussion. We know it's not fit for purpose, and it's got lots and lots of issues. It is in current discussion about where it'll move to and what it will look like, but it's nothing is confirmed yet. But it is very much part of ongoing discussions with the department and colleagues.
Right. Was the famous blue light centre, is that not happening?
It's still active discussion about what that looks like, how it's funded, where it's going to be located, what's configured in it. So the Department of Home Affairs are leading the Blue Light Hub project.
Okay, as 050, as a neighbour, apparently they'll be very happy when it moves.
It is in a very residential area, and we are very conscious that at all times of the day and night, those ambulances will be leading out of Douglas Ambulance Station. So yes, we do understand the impact on local residents, but obviously for safety purposes, if we're leaving the station for an emergency, we do need to go out on blues and twos.
Okay. Eileen. Hello, Eileen. You're live with Teresa Cope.
Hello.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi. It's about dentist.
Yeah.
My son was registered in Westmoreland, and for he's had health problems and this, that and the other. And then he had a problem with his teeth. And when he went down, he said, "You've been taken off because he hasn't used it."
Okay.
Anyway, we just had it. Well, I had to take over. He did get seen as emergency, and then we found out he had a problem in his mouth. Anyway, I just had it there. I got him somewhere else. And they've just had to pay for a hefty bill. Right, rather than taking them off if they haven't used it, why don't they get in contact or...
Yeah, and obviously give you the option about whether you still need that service or not, or whether you've managed to re-register. Eileen, again, I'm happy to sort of take that offline and look at that as an individual case. I know that we've got some real challenges around dental allocation and the amount of people waiting to be allocated a dentist. We are putting plans in place to address that. So we've recently agreed as a board that we are going to look at increasing the payment for dental activity, which we hope absolutely incentivises our contracted dentists to take on more NHS work and be able to see that reduction. It's one of the commitments we've made in the operating plan. But Eileen, I'll definitely take away your individual case if you can leave.
As I say, it's just when you do ring up a dentist, because I go to Hillside, I go there quite often,
yeah,
every 6 months, and you go or you ring up, and then they give you a text, and they give you another text, and you get a phone call to make sure you're going.
Yeah.
But really, if there's no one using the dentist, there's nothing in place
okay
to turn around and say, actually, do you still want our service? That's what I'm talking
right
about.
Eileen, are you happy for me to give your telephone number for Teresa to pick this up and move it along so that you're happy?
Yes, that's quite okay. Do I just stay on the line?
You just stay there. We'll take your number and we'll pass that through to Teresa. And talking of this, I think it was Chris Stockport who mentioned dental care. And the amount of, he said, if you compare to 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, the amount of treatments that are now available and that people want in dentistry are enormous compared to a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, the demand is incredibly high. And it's like the rest of healthcare. The number of opportunities, the interventions, the treatments is much, much greater. And so keeping pace with that demand. And obviously, you know, we have a model where we have contracted dentists, and then we have our community dental service, which supports some of the emergency work and some of the more specialist work. But it really does need an awful lot of reform. We recognise it's a real source of contention for the population. We've really talked about what eligibility should look like, what services we should have. But I do think we've fallen out of step with the payment system for our contracted dentists who are businesses. And we must make it financially attractive for them to be able to do NHS work alongside their private work. And so we have made that decision to offer new contracts and a new payment rate in the hope that our contracted dentists on Ireland will be able to pick up some more NHS work, and it's attractive for them to do so.
Obviously, as you say, the dentists are businesses.
They are.
They're
yes.
businesses, and that's one thing to bear in mind. And is it the UDA system, so units of dental activity that'll be going out? And of course, dentists, I mean, bless them. Dentists can get very well paid, and in the private sector with DenPlan and everything, it's very attractive for some people to do that. So, I mean, do you ever feel like you're walking up the down escalator with dentists?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, they are businesses, and there is a substantial private market. So dentists, don't have to do NHS work. I mean, they can be entirely able to sustain their business on purely private work. And so that's why we have to make sure the unit of dental activity and the payment for that is worth their while to do it. And it had fallen out of step. It was way behind England. And we know from talking to our contracted dentists, it was meaning that they were not able to make it cost effective. So that's why they were not committing to as much NHS activity as what they perhaps would like to.
And of course, they have to pay hefty insurance premiums, don't they?
Absolutely. And there's a huge amount of running costs with the technology, the equipment they use, to make their businesses viable. And of course, that's what we need to be able to support them to it. They can't do this work. They can't do this work at a loss. So recognising that the UDA value had to be increased is really important. And we're in discussions with all of those dentists about how we move to this new arrangement. And we should see more NHS activity taking place over the next 12 months.
OK, we'll file this one under how do you know what you need to know before you get there? My brother had to fly to Liverpool last week, all expenses paid, for something. When he got there, the specialist said he could have told him over the phone. That's Bob on 437. How do you get much of this?
We do, and it's so disappointing to hear. And that's why we're taking a real focus this year on those contractual arrangements with Liverpool and making sure that this type of thing doesn't really happen, because it's hugely inconvenient for the patient and their family, but it also is very costly. It's around £700 for the journey. And then we've obviously got a tariff price to pay for that treatment in Liverpool. And so we are, and we have contractually asked all of those providers that if you can do a virtual clinic, if you can do a telephone clinic, please do that. You must do that. And we took quite a hard line at the start of the year. And I think that sort of prompted a little bit of negativity. But we have to do this, because we cannot afford for that to happen, both from a patient experience perspective, but also from a costs of healthcare perspective. So we need to knuckle down on that. And we are putting in processes to stop that. So again, I would like to understand and talk to this gentleman about his experience, because I would want to understand where on our side did this fall down that meant we hadn't recognised that that appointment could be achieved. It could be that it wasn't until he got there that he realised it was going to be something so straightforward that a telephone call would have worked.
Okay, Teresa Cope is here, the boss of Manx Care, will be on Man in Line until 1 o'clock today. It's 12:30. Call, text, email and WhatsApp.
Get the full story. Tune in to Manx Radio's newscast for in-depth interviews behind the headlines. Find the newscast now at manxradio.com or your usual podcast provider.
At Holmes & Davidson Opticians in Douglas, we see more, so you can too. Our advanced eye examinations go beyond the standard checkup, using state-of-the-art Heidelberg 4D retinal imaging and Eidon ultrawide field technology to detect early signs of eye disease before symptoms even appear. We're the Isle of Man's trusted experts in eye health because your vision deserves more than average. Book your advanced eye exam today at Holmes & Davidson Douglas. Clarity, care, cutting-edge technology.
No matter how much you need to dig or how much you want to dump, Fox Group Isle of Man offer an extensive range of plant hire, long-term lease and sales. We're the island's exclusive supplier for Louis Gong excavators with immediate delivery. Our machinery comes with a complete service package with finance plan options. Call John on 458946 to discuss your plant needs. Fox Group Isle of Man, part of the Fox Group of companies.
The race is on to help local charity Manx Breast Cancer Support Group, and you can help win it. It's the KPMG Promenade Relay, Friday 18th of July, along Douglas Seafront, with 100% of entry fees and sponsorship going to Manx Breast Cancer Support Group, dedicated to enhancing breast cancer care on the Isle of Man. Gather your team of up to four people to tackle a 10K course, or go it alone over 5K. Entries close 16th of July. Visit kpmg.ws/PromRelay2025 for details and registration. The KPMG Promenade Relay, supported by your nation station, Manx Radio.
Coming up, we have another winning weekend on Manx Radio, and this time we're giving you the chance to win a place at Stage Ed's Summer Stage School, worth £160. 5 days of singing, dancing and acting for anyone aged between 6 and 18. You'll explore songs from Hamilton, Matilda, Frozen, Heathers and more, with a performance for friends and family at the end of the week. To win, listen out right across the weekend, and as soon as you hear our special question, text your answer to 166177 and make sure you're listening on Monday afternoon to find out if you're the lucky winner. Don't miss your chance to win this weekend with Stage Ed and Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Teresa Cope is here. Dennis dropped me a note in on 457. I'd like to say thank you to Teresa Cope for the improvements that are definitely appearing in healthcare. In Nobles and Ramsey Cottage, eye treatment on the Isle of Man instead of treatment in Liverpool being just one example. Thank you again, Dennis with two N's.
Thank you, Dennis, with two N's.
So the treatment of eye problems, this has been mentioned before a couple of times.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the thinking behind getting that on the Isle of Man? Was it specialists? Was it equipment, money? What was it?
It's more the specialists. And we now have a nurse consultant in ophthalmology who can do a lot of those eye injections. It is about having the right skills and competencies on the island and the right pathways in place with Liverpool, for example, if anything does go wrong. But again, we know from patient feedback, having to go across to Liverpool for those injections on a regular basis, not only was it really costly, but it was a really poor experience. So we need to put that right. So we have some big plans around ophthalmology to bring as much of that work back to the island as we possibly can. There are business cases being developed. We are buying the equipment. We are developing and training the workforce to be able to do that, because I would like to get to the point where for people with eye conditions, they only have to go to Liverpool if they really do need that specialist care by a tertiary provider.
Okay, and at one end, this is Jeffrey, who just said, when are those nice people from Synaptics coming back?
We don't have a contract with Synaptic anymore. They came and helped us to do a very specific piece of work in terms of that restoration recovery work to get the waiting list down.
Well, they got the cataract list down to nothing.
They did, and they did great work with our orthopaedic surgeons as well and general surgery. Like you say, it was an additional money outside of our annual budget, which allowed us to bring Synaptic in. It was a great experience. They did help us with the waiting list. We are looking through transformation about what else we can do to respond to our waiting list challenges. But yeah, no plans to bring Synaptic back at this point.
Okay, and Juan's with us now. Hi, Juan, you're live with Teresa Cope.
Hi, Andy. Teresa, how are you?
How, Juan? Hi.
Hi. Yeah, Definitely wouldn't like your job, I'm for sure. I think definitely you're underfunded. Government have a nice way of doing arm's length business just so as it doesn't come back on their toes. But yeah, I think also at top level, it seems to be the story that again, it's overstaffed at the top level and nurses doing 13-hour shifts. Matrons as well, they're not being seen. The new matrons are not being seen much on the floor. But just on a note there, you talked about cataracts and Synaptics, who'd done a great job for you with that. And I think it's like the fourth bridge, just painting the fourth bridge. You have to start again, don't you? I think you're getting, from what I believe, 20 to 25 referrals a week now back on cataracts. And you've got one part-time surgeon who's been off for quite a few months. So I'm just wondering in the future now, budget-wise, etc., because Synaptics obviously cost a lot of money, where you're heading with that in the future, because that's building up again very, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely, Duren. And yes, you have great knowledge. You have great knowledge. Yes, we add around 80 to 100 cataract procedures to the waiting list every month. So that does grow very quickly. And the level of capacity we have for the level of demand is mismatched. So we do need to do something. We have tried various things. And it is one of those areas where we manage to recruit and then we don't manage to retain, and so we need to look at different models. But and we will be making some very key decisions through the board on the future of ophthalmology in the next few months. So we'll be able to update then. But there's a lot of things in the mix for consideration. But it comes back to the basic principle: is we will be delivering as much eye care on island as possible. We've got the new contract with opticians coming into play as we speak, and that will provide further opportunities for us to look at how we use our opticians and in the community to help us with that pathway. It's a very tricky area because it's a very high demand area, but yes, I mean, I think it's probably something that we can talk a little bit more clearly on in terms of what those future plans look like in the next couple of months when we've sort of landed what that model is definitely going to look like.
Okay, Julian? Julian?
Yeah. Thanks, Andy. Two other quick questions for you as well. Another thing which is government have given arm's length out at the moment. Where we stand with mental health issues on the Isle of Man, this is a big one now. And I'm hearing people are just getting like pushed off with certain, you know, drugs and medications and stuff. It concerns me now the mental health issues within the island with the younger people. And also, I don't know what your thoughts are on turbo cancers, myocarditis in younger people and what is causing that.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so I think, you know, certainly post-pandemic, mental health demand has gone up. I think we're seeing some really positive developments here on the island, albeit we start from perhaps not having the range of services that other systems have had. You know, there is a recognition now around sort of ADHD and what are we going to do about that, of other neurodivergence. But psychological therapies, I think, is a real success here on the island. And I remember when I first started here, I think we had less than 10 therapists delivering psychological therapies. And I think we're now close to 50. And those waiting times have reduced dramatically in that I think I was meeting with a team last week. Almost 90% of people are seen within 6 weeks, which is still too long. If you have a psychological issue, you really want it to be dealt with quite quickly, but we do have quite responsive times. We have opportunity for self-referral, and we have Cooth and Quell, which is the online platforms, which aren't for everybody, but for some people, that online forum and platform is very accessible to them and very helpful. We got very, very good feedback from people who find that as a preferable way of engaging with psychological support. CAMHS, as you know, the waiting lists were incredibly high, and we were very fortunate to get additional investment into CAMHS at the end of last year, and that programme of work has started. started. The waiting list for CAMHS has halved in that time in response to the additional staffing that we've been able to put in the additional interventions. But it is one of those areas where we still need to do more. We still need to broaden the range of interventions that we do. We see examples and cases all the time where we need to sort of think more systemically. We need to do the think family piece, and we need to reach out and support. We know we need to continue to focus on those early intervention and self-help opportunities. So a lot of good work going on, working in schools around psychological support and those practitioners. The new model with I'll Listen, Minds Matters, is working incredibly well. That single point of access and working with that organisation on that new pathway is working well. So I'm not saying it's all rosy, but I think we've made substantial improvements, and we've got a very clear plan as to how we sustainably deliver those improvements in particularly child and adolescent mental health over the next couple of years, having real impact from that £3 million worth of investment that we got last year.
Okay. All right. Joan, thanks for calling today.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Good to hear Good to hear from you. This is regarding, let me find it here. It's regarding A&E. There we are. Is it possible to have another triage nurse to stop people using A&E as a GP at night?
I don't think we would. I understand why. And I think, you know, it's always a case that people do use A&E when it's not a real accident or emergency. We can always transfer people into the med service, the GP out of hours. But I think, you know, from our perspective, once people present to us, we're not going to turn anybody away.
Right.
So there is a sort of an education piece with the public about how they access those services and what is the most appropriate service for to deal with their presenting condition. But the reality is, from a governance perspective, you know, we work with things like the Royal College of Emergency Medicine guidelines. If someone has presented to the emergency department, we are not going to just turn them away.
Right.
We might transfer them to a different service where we know they will definitely get picked up and seen. But no, and unfortunately, another triage nurse just turning people away isn't the answer, and we wouldn't be doing that.
Some people say that, you know, somebody who goes to A&E, or sorry, ED now as it is, at 8 o'clock on a Friday night because they couldn't get an appointment at a GP on a Friday afternoon, that's not right. They just think that person isn't, if you like, displaying civic duty. They're putting the burden onto Manx Care, which could then, we all know about the long waits that there can be on a Friday and Saturday night, and people being there till 2-3 in the morning, because the place is bottled up with people who otherwise either, you know, are drunk or should have gone to the GP.
Yeah, no, I accept that, and we do see evidence that. And equally, people phoning meds because that's sort of more convenient, and you do get, I mean, I did a shift with meds a few weeks ago, and it's a great service. You know, your phone call is answered within a couple of rings. You get straight through to a practitioner. You know, I think fundamentally we have to, through our programme, sort the fundamental core issue out. We have to make sure people can access their GP and they don't feel as though they have to go to these alternative routes to be able to be seen.
Yeah. Are there enough GPs on the Isle of Man?
We would like to have more.
But let's just get this straight. They are individual businesses then, aren't they?
In the main, yes. Manx Care runs Ballasalla practice, and we do have some salaried GPs who supplement the primary care offer. But yes, these are primary care contractors, so these are separate businesses who we contract with as Manx Care.
Okay.
It's not all about GPs as well. You know, we've had a lot of success about other practitioners who support primary care in its wider sense. So the first contact practitioners in mental health, the first contact practitioners in physiotherapists. These are all registered professionals who can deal with conditions. So, you know, you would be better off in most cases, seeing a first contact practitioner for mental health, or, you know, a qualified registered mental health nurse or therapist, rather than a GP for a mental health concern.
Okay.
Similarly, for a musculoskeletal issue, you know, back pain, for example, you're better off seeing a physiotherapist.
Okay. But just going back to GPs, do you monitor service levels with GP?
Absolutely. Yes, on a very regular basis, and we have a team of people who do that. So we do have a good relationship with our GPs, and also a very clear contract monitoring. You know, I think, again, another area where we would like to do more reform is what the GP contract looks like. But equally, we also need to invest in some of those services which sit out into the community. So again, the operating plan speaks to funding, some of that funding moving from acute services, secondary care services out into the community to allow GPs to be funded more, because again, they are businesses. It has to work for them too from a financial perspective, to start delivering more and more services out in the community. And we've done that with things like the dermatology service, the hub and spoke model, which works really, really well with GPs with extended roles.
I've got a note in from, I think it's Colin in Pittsburgh in the United States, who's a medic trained and wants to come back to the Isle of Man, but it's something to do with his driving, emergency ambulance driving training and requalification set by IMAS. He says is in line with the position adopted by the UK Ambulance Service. The minimum qualification is a Level 3 certificate in emergency response ambulance driving, which has a total qualification time of 165 hours. So there's a Manx medic who's in Pennsylvania who wants to come back, and they're trying to match up the qualifications that he has in America with the Isle of Man. Is that possible?
Yes, I think, you know, one of the key things for paramedics is that they're on their what's called the HCPC, the Healthcare Professional Council register. So that's like the professional qualification. If he has that, then I think we can look at what the alignment looks like between those other elements, like the driving skills, which aren't secondary, which are secondary to his professional registration. So again, it's one that I'm happy to take offline and discuss with our head of ambulance service, and just reach out to him and have that conversation.
Okay, we're live with Teresa Cope. Our man in line today.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Cornerstone Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
Enjoy uncompromised relaxation at great prices in Millichap's Stressless Studio Clearance Event. Come and see the clearance prices for yourself and find out which of Stressless's range of recliner chairs is right for you. The Stressless Studio Clearance Event, now on downstairs at Millichap's of Ramsey.
Have you been into H&H Motorcycles or been to HNHmotorcycles.im? There is everything you need, from clothing and accessories to service, repairs and tyres. Stocking the full range of RST, Race FX Enduro and motocross clothing, plus Oakley sunglasses and goggles and casual clothing. H&H are the island's Arai, Bell and AGV helmet, motor oils and quad lock distributor. Call in at South Quay Industrial Estate Douglas for a browse, coffee and a chat, or shop online with home delivery.
Hi, this is Chris Pearson. Join me and Christy De Haven chatting with Sir Barry Gibb about the Bee Gees and growing up on the Isle of Man.
I used to play in the pits during the TT races.
Here's Sir Barry's memories of growing up here.
So I ran up the street at Williston and the squib went right up my shorts.
I'm going to mention two words, you know, I just want to get your reaction. Kenny Everett.
Oh, Kenny, Jesus. I love Kenny Everett.
And maybe you can help Sir Barry solve a 60-year-old Manx mystery.
We were standing at the side of the river in Spring Valley. This box came floating down the river, and inside the box was a baby crying. So we picked the box out of the river.
Sir Barry Gibb talking all things Bee Gees and Isle of Man.
And didn't matter where we go in the world, I'm Manx man, and that's the end of it.
Brought to you by Manx National Heritage.
Hi, this is Barry Gibb. Join me on Manx Radio with Christy De Haven and Chris Pearson.
Timwald Holiday Monday from 6 and available afterwards as a podcast at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Teresa Cope's here from Manx Care, and so is Brian. Hi, Brian.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call to start off with. I would like to talk about GPs or GP services. You've just touched on the GPs. I think we can, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we can all say that there's very long delays to get an appointment to see a GP these days. I also believe that Manx Care are involved in setting up a phone contact service which has been operated from Ramsey to a UK GP providers. Is that correct?
We are currently looking at, and well, we're piloting something called a virtual GP to try and resolve some of the capacity issues. So yes, we're piloting virtual GP, which does link back to GP appointments in England. Yep.
So when you say capacity issues, can I translate that to that there appears to be a shortage of GPs in England?
Well, I think in terms of measuring access, we would like to have more GPs. But as I said before, it's not just about GPs. We would like to have more GPs, but it is about more capacity in primary care, which means you might be seen by a physiotherapist, for example, with the right skills, or a mental health practitioner with the right skills. I think we have to support GPs and try and make best use of other professionals who are ably qualified and have the right skills to see patients. A number of patients will always still need to see their doctors, their GPs, and that GP will still have overall responsibility for the management of the patients on their caseload, on their lists. But I think it is important to recognise that we need to not just think about recruiting extra GPs in the context of trying to increase the primary care availability.
Okay, well, fine. I can take that on board. I think for a lot of the general public, the urgency is with contacting a GP, and I appreciate the fact that you've got pharmacist-based and physiotherapist-based, and you've got nurse practitioners-based in group practices, but I think a lot of stuff that people are experiencing is that they generally can't get a GP. Okay. And I understand that you've only got a limited amount of money, so you've got to put that money into different places. What I would like to go on and say is, I'm personally friends with two doctors that are currently part of a programme through the NHS in the UK, and they've been based in the Isle of Man for the last almost 3 years. They're coming up now to the end of their qualifying period as a GP, because it's a GP. They're both long-term doctors that have decided to have I'm going to describe it as a career change. I don't know if that's the correct terminology for it, but that's what I'll describe it for. One of them is due to complete and pass out in August. Okay. That person has already contacted Manx Care through a point of reference and wrote to each individual group practice. And there's no current vacancies for GPs being advertised. It just seems a bit odd that the Isle of Man's going to the trouble for these placements through a UK scheme and then is not able to potentially offer any opportunities for work here if they want to stay.
I think the question is, who advertises for the vacancies? Is it the GP practices or is it Manx Care?
It would be the GP contractors who would advertise for any vacancies. So those GPs who were contracted with. As I say, Manx Care does run Bellacella practice and has a small number of salaried GPs who supplement the GP provision. But again, I'm happy to pick this up offline because I would want us to always try and support recruitment locally of people who have trained here and indeed want to stay and work here. Obviously, we have a finite budget and we have to have a vacancy in the ability to put people into those roles. We can't create roles without funding. But it is something that I would be keen to take offline and perhaps you can ask them to reach out to me directly.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let me see. That was,
I think it was Brian.
Brian, wasn't it? Brian. What's your email address, Teresa?
Teresa, T-E-R-E-S-A dot cope, C-O-P-E at gov.im.
Okay. And Val's with us now. Hi, Val.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Val.
I'd just like a quick question, not going to stay on. Why do we get the doctors, as nice as they might be, over here, and they can't speak any English? I've seen a few doctors. I can't understand them.
Whereabouts? Which one is this, by the way? Which GP practice is it?
It's not the GP practice, it's Nobles itself.
Okay.
If I get a doctor there, I've had occasions where I can't understand a word they're saying.
Okay.
And I come out and I think, well, I don't know what they've said.
And was this a consultant that you went to see?
Oh, yeah, you get them, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, let's address that then, Teresa Coe.
Yeah, so any doctors who come who haven't trained in England, who've perhaps trained overseas, we bring them here. They all have to complete certain standards of English exam and pass all of those before the sort of GMC support them coming onto the General Medical Council, onto professional registers. So everyone should have that standard of English, but accepting the difficulties that you've had. And again, I think it's about those sort of wider professionals who can help support. But you know, we value our overseas recruitment of doctors particularly. It is where we aren't able to grow our own in the same way as we are nurses and other allied health professionals. So we are reliant on being able to recruit doctors. And obviously we offer Foundation Year 1 and Year 2 training places linked to the Northwest Deanery.
Okay, well, we've got 30 seconds left, so can you tell me very quickly, letters that go astray and appointments?
Yep, so we know this has been an issue, and we definitely want to be able to get the text reminder system. So we're launching something in July. We'll put the comms out, but there'll be an opportunity to make sure we have all your correct details and we can get the text reminder system up and running.
Okay, well, we got through about 10% of the questions we should have got to. So I'll invite you back before Christmas. Can you make that?
Of course.
We've been with Teresa Cope today, and just a note in from, let me see, this is Barry. Barry, who said, I'd like to thank the medics for the service I receive. I'm 87 and understand the problems. The problems I'm treated for were in the main created during my service in the Far East 60 years ago. And also a note in from 121 saying, Ballasalla Medical Centre's very good in all ways. That's it. Thanks to Teresa Cope. Thanks for being with us today. And thanks to Alex on the phones. Back tomorrow, open line on Man in Line. W-I-N-T.